Welcome to Healthy Bottom Line, a monthly Chief Healthcare Executive podcast, where we discuss topics at the intersection of policy and cost to show how innovation is improving health and saving money. I'm your host, Assistant Editor Skylar Jeremias. Today, I'm joined by Erica Coletti, CEO of the Alliance for Better Health. We discuss some of the current problems associated with programs addressing social determinants of health, and how the Alliance's Social Independent Practice Association, or IPA, model can help tackle these issues. We also talked about the financial benefits hospitals and health systems can see when implementing policy changes that seek to improve SDOH programs. Erica, it's nice having you on with us today. Can you start off by introducing yourself and telling us a bit about what you do at Alliance?
Sure. So my name's Erica Coletti. I recently became the Chief Executive Officer for Alliance for Better Health. Previous to that, I was the Chief Operating Officer for the last couple of years and joined the organization around 2019, early 2019. And here, I'll just give you a little bit more on Alliance itself and who we are. So we have over 400 organizations in a connected network of community-based organizations. We have over 25 or so health system affiliates that we work with. And having the IPA, we also contract with health plans for those services.
Now, what problems are programs that address social determinants of health attempting to fix?
In terms of problems that we're attempting to fix by engaging these community-based organizations around social determinants of health, the way we look at this is, each person has a lot of factors in their life that impact their health. And that includes, where they live, how they live, how they work, and their how they socialize. And so if there are individuals or families who may be food insecure, let's say, and don't have access to healthy food, that could cause things like diabetes or heart disease and chronic conditions that will have obviously a long-term impact on the person's health and on the cost to the health plans. So that's like one example that we would look to support. There are many others. I could also share around transportation barriers, for example, if someone who's in the underserved or Medicaid group and struggles financially and their car breaks down and that's their one way that they get to the job that they have and they need to maintain and they can't fix the car, well, then transportation is now a barrier and that adds a significant amount of stress and could cause a cascading impact in their lives and their overall health. And so, we work to connect those individuals to immediate transportation supports and then the longer term help around how do they fix the root problem.
What are some of the current challenges associated with SDOH programs?
There are a few. The top of mind is the payment and funding structure. So although it's pretty well known, I'd say by now, SDOH is such a common thing in a lot of media and articles today, that addressing those needs positively impacts a person's health, even more so than medical care. It really requires a system change. So the systems around health and care are all about medical and to some degree behavioral, and the health plans pay for those services, but there is no payment method, at least not in a systemic way, around getting payments to those critical social services. So a lot of these organizations are funded by philanthropy, obviously, and these large donations and things like that, not through a process like the medical system is. So that's one biggie. Another one is, this one and done approach with some of the programs. So we've had conversations with health plans about doing a social care program for their membership. And this is just one example, but they look at things in isolation or silos like, oh, let's do a food program or let's address food insecurity. if somebody has a food access challenge and can't get to regular food, there's likely other problems that are around that person that really need to be addressed as well to create a sustainable long-term impact on the individual and their health. So that's another one. So trying to sort of change that mindset of like, don't, you know, it's not just about focusing in this one space, but to look across multiple things. The other challenge is just in that, and it sort of carries from the last thought, is that there's really like a siloed approach. There's a lack of coordination between medical, behavioral, and the social care provider network, and looking at this as a holistic person-centric effort. So there's the social care providers lack technical infrastructure, and all of the various medical providers have different technical infrastructure. And so there isn't really a way to pull that all together and bring that visibility, or there's not the incentives in place to really collaborate across those.
What exactly is an IPA model, and how can the Alliance's social IPA model help solve some of these problems?
I think some of your, or many, or most of your listeners probably are familiar with medical independent practice associations. So it's really similar, with the exception that we're focused around the social care providers or community organizations. So we need to create really this a public utility that's an access of bringing all these social care providers together with all the different services across different geographies, and that this can be accessed by different customers, so to speak, like plans and government and so forth, and even the individuals themselves. The model itself really is to help get the funding or get the dollars from the plans to the community organizations providing the social services that support the overall reduction in medical costs. This whole model, though, it needs coordination and oversight to make it all work. We have a referral center that helps look at the referrals across the different organizations, because we want to make sure the individual doesn't fall through the cracks and as they move from one service to another. And we're looking to, you know, group different services together to provide those to a health plan in a way that affects their challenges with their different members. What we do is we're creating a one-stop shop for plans and government and other potential customers, so to speak, to be able to access a network of social care providers and have their individual members have their needs addressed holistically.
What else do health plans, hospitals, and health systems need to do to address these issues?
So in the past year or so in our health or in our work with across the system, so although the IPA focuses on pulling together community organizations, we're really also focused on making those different connections between health care, health plans, and the community organizations. So many of the hospitals, health systems in the plans have started SDOH screenings of their members and patients. And this is great, but they aren't yet systematically closing that loop. So they may assess somebody for a housing need, but there's no tracking beyond that. If somebody says, yep, I have a need, that's where the information ends. And so, you know, we'd really like to help facilitate moving from that kind of a process and the phone calls that somebody might make to try to connect somebody, and then it just goes into the, you know, ether, but really to move to systems that make it easier to both look across and see what is out there. So again, a network of services based on where the individual, and it's easiest for the individual to access services, as well as showing that visibility that the person received the services, I think is really important from the provider's perspective too. Another thing that they could do or need to do is really, I'd recommend not doing siloed investments. So in the experience, again, with some of the plans or even the health systems, they'll look at a certain problem in isolation. So a health system might say, oh, we need to start a food pantry, but they don't realize that there's a food pantry, you know, three blocks away. Or a plan will say, we want to create a food plan just for our members. But again, then that leaves a gap in the community. So we wanted to look at it more holistically and bring the values and the value that these other organizations provide together and do it in a coordinated way. I think the other thing is putting pressure on technology vendors. So the health systems and the plans, they all have different tools, different EHRs, different things like Salesforce or, you know, care management tools. And there needs to be, and I think there is, this is happening too across the country, but I'd say the more the better, but focusing efforts on interoperability. The plans will put, you know, they may want the community-based organizations to enter data like in 15 different systems, and they're already a really taxed group for resources. And it just adds a lot of complexity where these vendors could really open up some of their systems to be able to create some methods to transfer information more seamlessly.
How can implementing these tools and policy changes help improve the patient experience and quality of care?
Sure. So a big thing is visibility. I think my last point relates to that. So the visibility around the holistic view of the person and their experience. So, you know, if I'm in a housing shelter and I get somebody walks in, I don't want to screen them for everything or ask them the same questions or have them fill out the same paperwork again, when they may have just come from another institution or their primary or, you know, the hospital. And, you know, it creates a negative experience. And that there's continuity to their services. So in that same visibility way, just like part of what our referral center does too, is just making sure that the person doesn't just drop off and nobody reached back out to them if they were supposed to get connected. So I think in that way, that really helps. The other thing is really helping to navigate the social care services and network. It's very, very complex. Each, you know, geography is a little different with what kind of benefits they have. And when you're an individual or, you know, patient looking for help and you are under a stressful situation, I mean, I think it would be hard for us who aren't or maybe having a great day. It's going to be very challenging. So how do you make that simpler and provide the expertise to the person to get the right services and access those benefits that are out there for them? It's really about turning the system around and having it be about the person.
And lastly, what are some of the financial benefits that can stem from revamping SDOH programs and implementing tools to improve their effectiveness?
Well, back to really the idea of better health. That's the big goal that this will help individuals feel better and have healthier outcomes. And with that, by focusing around this space, you know, there'd be, back to one of my examples previously, a reduction in chronic conditions or developing chronic conditions. So obviously there's a lot of incremental costs associated with that, increasing costs for each individual. And there's been a rise in those chronic conditions like diabetes. So I think affecting that or trying to nip that early in the process or early in a person's life. Also, reduction in readmissions to hospitals and, you know, improvement in their overall care. So again, I think this all ends up reducing the cost burden on the organizations. You know, when you look at how we're trying to get to value-based care, this can really help in those contracts. So, you know, as plans that want to work with systems to help reduce the overall cost of a certain group of people or population, you know, integrating the social services into that, which is, you know, lower cost than the medical care, really reduces that overall cost burden while improving the health of the person.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Healthy Bottom Line. Be sure to check out the show notes for more information on the topics discussed. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Chief Health Exec and on LinkedIn and Facebook. You can also check out our sister CHE podcast data book as you wait for a new episode of Healthy Bottom Line. Until next time, I'm your host, Skylar Jeremias.